Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null. I don't love you
anymore. Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Nice to have you with us, broadcasting video streaming live from our studios in New York City. Today, we're going to take a look at why children are so unhealthy in the United States. And I'm going to ask you for your feedback. I'm going to do two talkback segments today. I'm also going to talk about the top healing foods to stop ovarian cancer right in its tracks, and then how to fix your digestive problems with the best ways and the worst foods. You want to stay away from sun, use others. Also, the omega-3 fatty acids inhibit the influenza virus. This is at the same time that we're being told, get ready to take your new vaccine. You'll have more information which to challenge that. Excuse me. We're also going to have a commentary from Chris Hedges today called The Great Flood. I have my own commentary on that because my home was hit with 147-mile-an-hour winds and rain, and I'll give you the outcome of that. And for all the 4.1 million Floridians who are without water today to drink, potable water or electricity, what is the solution? Now, I'm also going to include the people in Houston and Louisiana and Mississippi who were also adversely affected last week with that hurricane, and the 40 million people living in the subcontinents, India, Bangladesh, that area. What are some solutions? Also, today, we had the commencement of a whole series of acknowledgments about 9/11. I intend to share mine as well. I believe that it's time that the truth came out. What we've been given up to this point is not the truth. It's propaganda. Why? Why would anyone want to give us propaganda? Why not just the truth? Whose interest does it serve to mislead? I'll give you that information. And also a commentary on that. And while we were so distracted with the hurricane, we weren't even told that a massive sunspot, two huge solar flares, could have enormous impact upon the Earth or release from the sun. For those of us who study all weather patterns, that would have been 1,000 times more devastating than any hurricane in world history. Fortunately, it didn't hit us, but it could have. Would we have been prepared? Not at all. I'll talk about that. So as you see, we have a lot to share. Let's begin. First up, I want to thank those of you who showed up to the lecture I gave on Saturday. As I mentioned, we were booked to the ceiling, so I didn't want to announce where I was going or have any more people come. What I was not anticipating was how overflowing it was. It's guesstimated there were 400 people standing because all the seats in the auditorium were filled, plus about 100 people were sitting around the stage. And one of the questions that came up before I actually started my lecture was, why is it that so few kids in America are vegan? And would that make a difference in their health? And the answer is partly. You can be a vegan and be unhealthy. You could eat pizzas that have no dairy or meat, and they do. That is not a healthy item. You could eat bread and pastries. So the mere fact that you're not eating something from an animal doesn't mean that you're eating something that's healthy. We need to be eating a plant-based diet, preferably one that's organic, ideally one that's locally grown to lower the carbon footprint and reduce global warming because we're doing it locally instead of getting an organic tomato from California or Mexico. If you live in Maine, that's a long way to travel, and that means a heavy carbon footprint. We also should be having a nation where kids are given a simple test to determine their need for nutrients. And almost universally, when a study is done, they're deficient in magnesium, calcium, vitamin C, and vitamin D. They're also deficient in the essential fatty acids that are an essential part of making our brain, our nervous system, and our hormones. But we are not deficient in junk food. We are abundant. So here's the result of a lack of exercise, a lack of really being a proper role model for our children by insisting, by example, that what we eat, they should eat, and why, having the time and patience to show them that food has consequences, even if it means at times showing them things that someone would say you're insensitive for showing. For example, one of the most powerful films, at least graphically, that I've ever done, was called Saving the Planet, One Bite at a Time. And I will never forget what people said when they came out, because we generally have a camera there just to get people's expressions. Horrifying, traumatizing. In fact, I was at the Huntington Arts Cinema. I was in the lobby while the film was being shown, waiting to go on afterwards. And a teenager came out and said, "I can't take this." And I said, "What part can't you take?" And this person said, "I can't see those animals hurt and abused and killed." I said, "But you eat hot dogs, hamburgers, steaks, fish, chicken?" "Yes." "Then you need to go back in there and sit down and look at it, because you're paying more attention to how you feel than how that animal feels. Imagine if you're in a country that strips like China, very advanced in their science and technology, very primordial in their ethics of how to deal with people in their body politic." Remember, it was under Mao Zedong and so many of the left's living God. They all carried around Mao's little book. Well, what if you were one of the intellectuals or artists that were put in re-indoctrination camps or simply killed? How many people were killed in his massive failure of resettlement programs during his great experiment? Upwards of 70 million. Now, if someone was trying to do what was right and killed 70 million people, then they didn't do what was right. If we care more about how we feel by how we experience our revulsion of pain that is shown in others, imagine what it's like to be the other. Imagine that pig that's being skinned by being boiled alive. They do that. They do that in China and in Korea. They simply tie a pig to a skewer, drop it into boiling water. It's fully alive. And then when it comes up, they're able to peel off the skin easier. Or imagine a dog or a cat or a kitten and a puppy. You go into a restaurant, they bring you over a cage, you choose the one you want, they go back and they skin it and boil it. Imagine what it's like to being done that. So never, never come to me and tell me how bad you feel. I don't give a damn how you feel. I care about how the animal feels. So get out of your own pity party. Get out of this whole generation of people who can't handle inner reality that puts them face to face with life, and ask yourself, would you want your dog, cat, bird, or goldfish treated the way your food is treated before you eat it? So, we're not even able to be honest about how the food that we eat is grown, prepared, or manufactured, or gets to us. If you saw a man in a suit, a haz suit, a chemical protectant suit, all white with goggles and big gloves, and they're out there spraying your lettuce, and they have signs posted, toxic to inhale, to breathe, not to have it on your skin and not to consume it. But you are going to consume it. It's not going to get washed off. When something is sprayed with a pesticide, you're going to get that pesticide in your body. Would you then go out to get that salad if you saw how the salad was sprayed and then looked at the science behind that, like glyphosate, and looked at the large mammary tumors in the rats that were fed glyphosate soy? So if you want to know why we've got 1 in 3 overweight kids in America, 1 in 6 with learning disabilities, 1 in 9 with asthma, 1 in 10 with ADHD, 1 in 12 with food allergies, 1 in 20 with seizures, and 50% of every child in America, 50% of all children, have chronic illnesses or are overweight. And yet, no one's concerned. The FDA is not concerned. The USDA is not concerned. The Surgeon General is not concerned. The idiots in the White House have never been concerned. All of the idiots, and I consider all of them idiots, because they act like idiots. It has nothing to do with their background or education or their business acumen. It considers, do you use your innate intelligence to stop this? And the answer is no. Not a single thing has any of these clowns, these dancing fools at CNN, the Anderson Coopers and the others who pride themselves in how essential they are to society, how cute, clever they are. You're neither cute nor are you clever. You don't have the decency to even realize the amount of hubris and arrogance you're infused with. When was the last time you'd had a national campaign to address obesity in children? There hasn't been one. Asthma, there hasn't been one. No, the only time there's ever an issue is when you want to raise money for one of these false charitable operations. You want to see how bad those get. Just look at all the ones for cancer, like the Komen Foundation, the rest of these organizations. So here we're sacrificing an entire generation. We don't teach them critical thinking. We spoil them. We want to be their friends. We want them to be our best friends. If they want to stay up till 2 in the morning, that's fine with us because they don't want them to be mad at us or just be disappointed in us as parents. My God, what kind of mess are you? That's a disgrace to parenting. And now when the kid goes out and eats the crap, and when they won't study, and when they are on their Facebook, and when they're sleeping with the cell phone glued to the side of their head, and they end up with destroying their brain, they've already destroyed their intellectual capacity to think and reason. When the teachers don't stand up because they know if they did, they'll get thrown in these stupid rubber rooms, the unions are corrupt. Everything is corrupt. Everything is a lie. The teacher that wants to be a legitimate teaching the way that those of us who really learned because we had good teachers, they're few and far between today because they know the consequences standing up against the institutional administrative machine. Want to bring healthy food into cafeterias? Good luck with that. Want to teach kids about the dangers of eating the wrong foods? Good luck with that. See how quickly you're reprimanded, if not by the people associated with the unions or associated with the vendors or associated with the lobbyists or associated with the governmental agencies, then look at the parent that comes in and smacks a teacher in the mouth because how dare you talk to my kid? Or how dare you teach the kid something that I don't approve of? Now you wonder why we have to have a floating standard and we get illiterates graduating from high school, college, junior high. We're the dumbest generation in history. Every country around the world seems to be able to produce children that actually understand issues and we don't. That's why I don't recommend anyone going to college at this moment. It is a wasteland, except it's a very profitable one, unless you have a very specific career and very specific guarantees that you're going to have your loan paid back within 5 years. And if you don't, there's no reason to go to college. But learning skills, yes. Learning how to think, yes. Learning how to understand the difference between a healthy food and unhealthy food, yes. Or learning how to be a vegan, yes. The very things we need to be teaching, we refuse to teach. Show me the class, show me the dietitian, nutritionist is going to advocate for veganism. Watch how quickly the food industry descends on them. It's a $300 to $400 billion a year industry. So here's my question for you. If you really care about people, then why don't we care about our children? Why have we sacrificed the last three generations to corporate greed and government complicity and media failure to address this? My figures are correct. When I say that 1 in 3 is overweight, that means heart disease, cancer, depression, suicidality, arthritis are going to be what this kid is now facing instead of a healthy, vibrant future. Our hypocrisy is palpable because we say we're something we are not. We proclaim things we aren't not doing. Take a look at what we do, what we eat, what we watch, who we vote for. I challenge 125 million Americans who voted for either Trump or Clinton to explain to me the legitimacy of the worst of two evils. You end up with evil. And nothing that is meaningful getting done. but everyone associated with him, whether it's George Soros and his foundations and ProPublica, all the rest, or on the other side, all the billionaires and their industries, those are the ones who profit. Show me where anything happens to the betterment of America, because the people who voted, voted wrong. The people who voted right, you have no power. So it tells you that we have a disempowered minority, not even a million votes for the person that could have changed America, because we don't want to change. We're too lazy. We're too indifferent. We're too selfish. We're too self-absorbed. We're too undisciplined. And then we wonder, why? Why am I suffering? Well, friend, look in the mirror. Separately, I told you I'd give you the foods that could help stop ovarian cancer. For people in this audience, you care about prevention. The average person does not. And that's unfortunate, because even when they get a disease, it doesn't mean that they're going to be motivated to change. My hope is that we prevent these diseases. And ovarian cancer, I've helped a lot of women with ovarian cancer. It's rough to do. Ovarian cancer is one of the most deadly diseases out there, fifth leading cause of cancer death among U.S. women. In fact, 14 out of 23,000 diagnosed each year with ovarian cancer, it'll be very aggressive, and they'll die from it. So what could we do? On a daily basis, we could be using ginger, because ginger has been shown to impact. Ginger root is an outstanding food for destroying cancer, ovarian cancer cells. Then we have ginkgo biloba. Also, research has shown that it can significantly lower the risk of developing ovarian cancer. Then we have green tea. There was a study of 61,057 women ranging from 40 to 76 over the course of 15 years. And for those who drank one cup of green tea daily, the risk of ovarian cancer was reduced by 24%. If you drank two cups a day, 46%. And for women who consumed the beverage constantly over 30 years, ovarian cancer was reduced by 75%. Now, mind you, that's if you did nothing else. If that's all you did, that's a huge percentage. And yet they give people the Gardasil vaccine as if that's going to prevent cancer. A, it's never been shown to prevent. Not once has it been shown by the actual scientific literature to prevent ovarian cancer. It's all based upon some false, stupid mathematical model. And I actually filmed the developer of it, who concurs that it won't prevent ovarian cancer, but green tea will. Flaxseed will also. And there's lots of good articles on how a plant-based diet and the omega-3 fatty acids can help that. And also, to help prevent the flu, there are certain foods that are necessary. I do not recommend the flu vaccine. It is a fraud. But here's what's not. Organic fruits and vegetables. That should be lots of juices, asparagus, onions, lentils, bananas, tomatoes, peppers. These are all anti-inflammatory. Turn off inflammation. They also help your joints, and also prebiotics and probiotics. Water. Water is essential to helping our body cleanse itself of bacteria, viruses, and the dead debris after we've used it in our life-sustaining processes. So water, clean, healthy water. There's lots of herbs that are known. Peppermint is great for both your breath and your digestion. And it also helps with the immune system. There's also, I would suggest, wild oregano oil, colloidal silver, very good, and cayenne pepper. So those are some things that are good. And the newest study shows that dark chocolate boosts brain function 2 ounces a day. That's the best on health and nutrition. Now, here's my question, and here's our talkback segment. If we're doing nothing as a nation to help the health of our children, our infants, toddlers, babies, teenagers. And if we are the sickest generation in history of America as far as our overall nutrition intake and health, now there are exceptions. Keep in mind, there are mothers and fathers who care deeply about their children's health. They're feeding them right. They're educating them right. They're about 5%. All right? That's several million kids from probably around, I'm going to suggest around 7 to 10 million parents. Good for them. But 95% are doing it wrong. The media is not exposing this, and it could. It has resources. But then again, the media is complicit because it takes money for all these, you know, all the ads you see that encourage people to eat wrong. The cell phone industry, the new cell phones are suggesting should start at $1,000 coming out this week. They'll make tens of billions of dollars on that, but not once will be there an ad in, or anyone in the media saying, these also, more than 45 separate scientific studies show you that more than 2 minutes, that's 120 seconds a week of cell phone use is damaging chromosomes. No one's going to say that, because if you did, you wouldn't get the advertising. So we'll spend a lot of money on something. It's going to hurt us. And then we start using it and become dependent upon it. And we become illiterate. We no longer write. We no longer speak in good English. We're conjugating verbs. We are using synonyms out of context. We are functionally illiterate. And we're letting our children be sacrificed for the profit. And if to make sure that they get profit from it, if your kids are not physically diseased, they tell their kid with every examination, you've got a mental problem and therefore your pathology. So we pathologized childhood. If you stand up and speak out, you have authority defiance disorder. If you don't like math, you have math defiance disorder. If you don't feel good in a big crowd partying, you have shyness disorder or social anxiety disorder. So no matter what you have, it's now a disease. How did all the pediatricians, how did all the psychiatrists, how did all the psychologists, how did all the mental health counselors and those who have a modicum of insight, like if you have a master's degree in psychiatric social work, how's it all of you missed this? Or were complicit in it, or did not challenge it. A complete breakdown of an entire society, the professional class, the educated class, the teacher class, all complicit in the destruction of our children. Why? And what can be done to change it? What's the solution? I have my ideas. I want to hear your ideas. Our talkback number is 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. We've lost our whole generation of children, with some exceptions. They can't think, and they're unhealthy, and they're committing suicide, and they're aggressive, and they're bullying, or they're terrified. They can't handle reality. And we're not looking at ourselves as the problem. We are. Your thoughts. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. I'm going to look forward to taking your calls here in a moment. Please call us and give us your thoughts. We have a critical thinking audience, and I'm always interested in what you have to say and how you view a problem and its solution. Now, I believe that the entire 9/11 report was politicized. I'm not alone. The very authors of the report have said the same thing. I also believe that it's what we're not told, that was not in the report, that could change the way we looked at this report. I want to share my concern with you on two levels. I'm going to read a report that you're not going to be aware of, unfortunately. Most people will not. And it's in two sections. And the first section is this man who I interviewed. His name is William Rodriguez. Now, who's William Rodriguez? Well, first, he was a janitor. Where? At the World Trade Towers, a trade center. And he was one of the people who survived 9/11, one of the last people, I might mention, because he got out just as the building was falling with another person, and they went underneath of a car, and that's how they survived. In fact, he was said to be the last man or last person out of the towers. Now, when I interviewed him, he told me some things that I had heard before, but I wanted independent confirmation. By the way, up on my website under personal photos, you'll see me in my running outfit, and I'm just, and who took the picture, I don't know. But someone took a picture of me running that morning on 9/11. I just got back in from Florida, my home, and I never, ever once went south. I always go north, join up with my brother Steve, and we run up the George Washington Bridge, run across, run back. It's about a 12-mile run. This time, it was late, and I just went left. And it was when I was going down there that I heard the plane. I said, that plane is too low. And there I saw the plane go over my head. Anyhow, there's a photograph of me right in front of the building as it's about to be hit. In any case, when it got hit and I got down there, people at that point were coming out of the building. And that's when a guy came over, and he was a Secret Service agent. But he knew me, and he said, we got to get these people out faster. So we did what we could to get people to, they were just, it's amazing. There was a group of people before the towers collapsed that was on fire. They were coming out, and they were rather orderly and seemed rather calm and were walking, not running. So I knew what I saw. And then when I started my investigation, how many people, first responders, firefighters, police officers, ambulance people, who told me there were explosions that they heard down at the bottom before the towers collapsed. Well, that's exactly what William Rodriguez said, but he was in a little different position to know. He helped save more than 100 people's lives that day, and despite his heroic actions, the media will not touch him. You will not see him on any media today. William Rodriguez will not be out there. Because he says the official story is not true. And there are many other people with him who are witnesses together, all heard an explosion from below before any planes hit the building. And he saw a door blown off. He was on the other side of the door from the explosion. So he saw he heard it. He saw it. He helped the person who was on the other side of the door who was injured get out and survive. He saw persons with their skin blown off. Mind you, I'm saying before the towers collapsed, this happened. Now, he told all this to the 9/11 Commission. He even offered more testimony from the other eyewitnesses that were all collecting together. I'm talking about eyewitnesses who were in the building who saw and heard the demolitions downstairs. None of that ended up in the 9/11 Commission report. His name, his statements are not even mentioned one time in the final report. So how could an eyewitness that could contradict the official story be in the official story? Then you'd have a contradiction. So they sanitized it. It's just one of the reasons why I want to see a real and honest investigation. Can I tell you who did the attack? No, I cannot. But I can tell you what didn't happen, and the official report is filled with lies. That's one example, but it gets worse. Why? Because now, because of the concern of the families of the survivors of the 9/11 attack, they put pressure upon Congress to finally, after all these years, to release those 28 pages of what really happened. Here's what we now can know from that. And now there's a major lawsuit. And this is from Matt Agarist on September 10th this year. And it says the following. A lawsuit filed against Saudi Arabia for their role in 9/11 has produced evidence of the Saudi Arabians conducting a dry run for the attack 2 years prior to 9/11. Quote, for the first time since that fateful September morning 16 years ago, families of victims of the 9/11 terror attacks are using a new law and are going after Saudi Arabia in lawsuits for their role in the attacks. New evidence in one major lawsuit now reveals that Saudi Arabian embassy in Washington may have funneled a dry run for the hijackings carried out by two Saudi employees. This new information is detailed in a bombshell report, and it, quote, 2 years before the airliner attacks, the Saudi embassy paid for two Saudi nationalists living undercover in the United States as students to fly from Phoenix, Arizona to Washington, D.C., quote, in a dry run for the 9/11 attacks. It says, they alleged the amended complaint filed on behalf of the families of some 1,400 victims who died in the terrorist attacks 16 years ago. The court filing provides new details that paint a, quote, pattern of both financial and operational support for the 9/11 conspiracy from Saudi Arabian sources. Lawyers for the plaintiffs say, in fact, the Saudi government may have been involved in underwriting the attacks from the earliest stages, including testing cockpit security. Quote, we've long asserted that there were longstanding and close relationships between Al-Qaeda and the religious components of the Saudi government. And this is further evidence of that. Citing FBI documents, the complaint alleges that Saudi students, these two students, and they had their names, Haman al-Sawali, were in fact members of the kingdom's network of agents in the United States and participated in the terrorist conspiracy. They had trained at Al-Qaeda camps in Afghanistan at the same time some of the hijackers were there. And while living in Arizona, they had regular contacts with Saudi hijackers, the pilot, and a senior Al-Qaeda leader from Saudi Arabia, now incarcerated in Gitmo. At least one tried to reenter the United States a month before the attacks as a possible muscle hijacker, but was denied admission because of he appeared on a terrorist watch list. Another one worked for both and received money from the Saudi government directly, and he was employed by the Ministry of Islamic Affairs. And he also, the two students, both were longtime employees of the Saudi government, and they had frequent contact with Saudi officials in the United States. Quote, after they boarded the plane in Phoenix, they began asking the flight attendants technical questions about the flight that the flight attendants found suspicious, according to the summary of the FBI case files. Quote, when the plane was in flight, the one student asked the flight attendant where the bathroom was, and the attendant pointed to the back of the plane. However, nevertheless, the student went to the front of the plane and attempted on two occasions to enter the cockpit. The attempt to enter the cockpit was so frightening that the plane was actually had to make an emergency landing, and both men were apprehended in the airport by the FBI. However, neither of them were charged, and the FBI let them go. And during the investigation, the FBI confirmed that both of their tickets, the students' tickets, were indeed paid for by the Saudi Arabian embassy. Quote, the dry run reveals more of the fingerprints of the Saudi government. These guys were Saudi government employees for years and were paid by the Saudi government. In fact, the Saudi embassy paid for their plane tickets for the dry run. There was no other justification for that being on that airplane. So that's new information that we haven't had before. That's important that we understand this. Now, so I believe that any reasonable person looking at the evidence would say, we need a new investigation, not one headed by a bunch of political hacks and covered up by the FBI, covered up by the CIA and the National Security Agency, but put people under oath, including Bush and Cheney and the former head of the CIA and the former head of the National Security Agency, and why the stand down, why there were no interception of any planes, all the things that are discrepancies, and then bring real scientists. There are over 2,000 scientists, engineers, who are willing to state now those buildings could not have melted. Steel, the steel that was actually used in there, melted 2,400-plus degrees, and yet the fuel in there burned at like 1,600 to 1,700 degrees. So it's just not possible for the plane's fuel to have collapsed it. And there have been so many forensic reports that I have seen showing puffs coming out the windows below, like controlled demolitions. So we need a real, honest investigation. We don't have that. Now, here is a summary from the Colbert Report. I think you'll find it interesting.
On the morning of September 11th, 2001, 19 men armed with box cutters directed by a man on dialysis in a cave fortress halfway around the world using a satellite phone and a laptop directed the most sophisticated penetration of the most heavily defended airspace in the world, overpowering the passengers and the military combat-trained pilots on four commercial aircraft before flying those planes wildly off course for over an hour without being molested by a single fighter interceptor. These 19 hijackers, devout religious fundamentalists who like to drink alcohol, snort cocaine, and live with pink-haired strippers, managed to knock down three buildings with two planes in New York. While in Washington, a pilot who couldn't handle a single-engine Cessna was able to fly a 757 in an 8,000-foot descending 270-degree corkscrew turn to come exactly level with the ground, hitting the Pentagon in the budget analyst office where DOD staffers were working on the mystery of the $2.3 trillion that Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld had announced missing from the Pentagon's coffers in a press conference the day before, on September 10th, 2001. Luckily, the news anchors knew who did it within minutes.
Osama bin Laden.
The pundits knew within hours.
Osama bin Laden.
The administration knew within the day.
Terrorists who committed these acts and those who harbor them.
And the evidence literally fell into the FBI's lap.
That a hijacker's passport was found blocks from the World Trade Center crash site, if you can believe that.
But for some reason, a bunch of crazy conspiracy theorists demanded an investigation into the greatest attack on American soil in history. That investigation was delayed, underfunded, set up to fail, a conflict of interest, and a cover-up from start to finish. It was based on testimony extracted through torture, the records of which were destroyed. It failed to mention the existence of WTC-7, Able Danger, PTEC, Sibel Edmonds, OBL and the CIA, and the drills of hijacked aircraft being flown into buildings that were being simulated at the precise same time that those events were actually happening. It was lied to by the Pentagon, the CIA, the Bush administration, and as for Bush and Cheney, well, no one knows what they told it because they testified in secret, off the record, not under oath, and behind closed doors. It didn't bother to look at who funded the attacks because that question is ultimately of little practical significance. Still, the 9/11 Commission did brilliantly, answering all of the questions the public had, except most of the victims' family members' questions, and pinned blame on all the people responsible, although no one so much as lost their job, determining the attacks were
failure of imagination.
Because
nobody in our government, at least, and I don't think the prior government that could envision flying airplanes in the buildings.
Except the Pentagon, FEMA, NORAD, and the NRO. The DIA destroyed 2.5 terabytes of data on Able Danger, but that's okay because it probably wasn't important. The SEC destroyed their records on the investigation into the insider trading before the attacks, but that's okay because destroying the records of the largest investigation in SEC history is just part of routine record keeping. NIST has classified the data that they used for their model of WTC-7's collapse, but that's okay because knowing how they made their model of the collapse would jeopardize public safety. The FBI has argued that all material related to their investigation of 9/11 should be kept secret from the public, but that's okay because the FBI probably has nothing to hide. This man never existed, nor is anything he had to say worthy of your attention, and if you say otherwise, you are a paranoid conspiracy theorist and deserve to be shunned by all of humanity. Likewise him, 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 and her. And her, and her, and him. Osama bin Laden lived in a cave fortress in the hills of Afghanistan, but somehow got away. Then he was hiding out in Tora Bora, but somehow got away. Then he lived in Abbottabad for years, taunting the most comprehensive intelligence dragnet employing the most sophisticated technology in the history of the world for a decade, releasing video after video with complete impunity and getting younger and younger as he did so, before finally being found in a daring SEAL team raid which wasn't recorded on video, in which he didn't resist or use his wife as a human shield, and in which these crack special forces operatives panicked and killed this unarmed man, supposedly the best source of intelligence about those dastardly terrorists on the entire planet. Then they dumped his body in the ocean before telling anyone about it. Then a couple dozen of that team's members died in a helicopter crash in Afghanistan. This is the story of 9/11, brought to you by the media which told you the hard truths about...
His head could be seen to move violently forward.
And...
They took the babies out of incubators.
And...
Mobile production facilities.
And...
The rescue of Jessica Lynch.
If you have any questions about this story, you are a batshit, paranoid, tinfoil, dog-abusing baby hater, and will be reviled by everyone. If you love your country and or freedom, happiness, rainbows, rock and roll, puppy dogs, apple pie, and your grandma, you will never ever express doubts about any part of this story to anyone. Ever. This has been a public service announcement.
All right. That's Corbett's perspective. Boy, is he right on every point. Now, as I said, I want to hear your talk back to see how you would address the problems we have. A tsunami of pain and hurt and suffering and crisis in our entire younger generation, and not a single thing is being done by anyone in positions of power in America. Yet a lot of people are profiting hundreds of billions of dollars a year. So what's your solution? Let's say hello to Lincoln from Mount Vernon. Lincoln, you're on the air.
The solution is...
I can't hear you, Lincoln. Get on a regular telephone. Lincoln, I need to just pick up the phone.
Yeah, can you hear me?
You're very echoey in distance. Are you on us? What are you on?
One second. My phone is acting. 1 second.
All right. Well, Lincoln, get it right. We're going to come back to you. We're going to go over and say hello to Vicky. Vicky from Connecticut. Your turn.
Hi, I'm on a cell phone. Is that okay?
Go ahead, Vicky. We can hear you.
Okay. I am a mom, and I became vegan at the beginning of the year. And I'm, you know, I don't really have a solution, per se, because I'm struggling it. Maybe my story might help other people that are going through it. But I have children, and my husband's not a vegan. He's a meat eater. He eats the fad diet. I guess my question to you is maybe... in the future, more ideas of how to support moms like me, because I'm on an island, basically. There's no other moms like me that are, they always look at me with weird eyes, like, you're vegan, what? So anyways, and it's a battle in my house. My kids side with my husband. They want to eat what he's eating. So anyways, any thoughts?
There's a certain point where you have to accept that the struggle is worth it, because the child cannot intellectually, but only emotionally, understand the constructs and constraints that you're both putting on. And in effect, there's a duality in the house. I'm sure your kids love you because you're their mom, but they also love their father. Now, if one wants to give them guidance that they may not like because it's making them uncomfortable and getting them out of their comfort zone and breaking some habits, there's a natural sense of resentment. That's going to happen to any parent anywhere throughout history. I can show you quotes from Cicero going back to how children are not always going to be what they should be or we want them to be, but we have to be patient and we have to guide them by example and then showing them. For example, show your kids. In fact, you know what I'll do? I'll put it up on the internet. I don't believe it's up there. Go to YouTube later today and ask your kids, would they just do you a favor and your husband, would they watch a film together and then let them dialogue about what they feel about it? And that film will be Saving the Planet One Bite at a Time. Now, it's going to make them angry, and accept that that anger could also be a point of breakthrough, because sometimes, you know, we have to get angry for us to get out of the stupor we live in. And if you're doing it from a position of love, it's only because you love your family more than they love themselves, and you're more concerned about the cause and effect of choices than they are, that you have to accept that you're going to get some abuse. And as long as you don't take it personally, as long as you can kind of stay in that Nietzsche world of existential detachment or the Buddha detachment, fine. Let them say what they want to say. Let them do their condemnation. Let them do their anger. Let them do their, you know, their how dare you. But understand that they're only reacting because that's all they've been conditioned to. They have no sense of reason. You're coming from reason. Your change was done by reason, not reaction. People don't go from eating meat to eating vegetables, or they don't go from eating vegetables to eating meat because of reaction. They do it because they've done their homework. It's like a vaccine. The parents who do the most research, the parents who are deeply committed to the science and seeing what the science is, are the ones who almost universally never vaccinate. The parents who do no research, the doctors who do no research, the nurses, pharmacists who do no research are the ones who accept without question that they're safe and effective and are the ones most likely to give you an attitude if you suggest it otherwise. I've done 15,000 hours of research. Now, there are at least five other people, and I'm sure more. I just know these five, who have done at least as much and possibly even more research than I have, because I've written 42 papers. But I will be the one who will be challenged and yelled and screamed at as somehow I'm denying people the virtue of vaccination. I'm saying, have you read 5,000 scientific studies? No, I have. So which one of us is actually more aware of the science? You who've read none or me who's read 5,000 and then made my decisions based upon what the science shows me? So you have to get beyond this cognitive disconnect of saying one thing, and your fear of change is what's keeping you and preventing you from changing, not the science. The science is on our side. Every single scientific study, every single study shows you that a Mediterranean diet, a plant-based diet, principally a plant-based diet, is a healthy diet, reducing breast cancer, heart disease, prostate cancer, Alzheimer's, turning off inflammation. Your husband cannot show you a single study that eating the hamburgers, hot dogs, the beef is going to make him live a longer life and have a healthier heart, nor your children. So then it's a matter of, are they resisting you because they're afraid of what would happen if they began to change, the discomfort of that, and also the guilt and shame. As long as you're a part of a consensus, as long as you're the good Nazi, and the average German was a good Nazi, 50 million Germans are equally guilty in genocide. I don't cut the slack that others do because I'm not willing to give them the advantage of, we didn't know Jews were big. We didn't know that communists. We didn't know Marxists were big. We didn't know blacks were big. We didn't know the gypsies. BS. They're lying, pathologically lying. Everyone in Germany knew. We knew. We knew 2 years before we entered the war. We could have stopped and bombed those tracks going into Auschwitz and the other Treblinka and the other camps. We chose not to. It was a political decision. We chose to turn away ships. It was a political decision. Now imagine that if that reality were made front, here's what you knew, and then here's you, you're going to feel guilt and shame. So everyone likes to believe that what they have done or what they have not done by speaking out against injustice is because they were not aware. Don't give them that benefit. We are aware of everything in life. There is no lack of awareness. Do you think any of the people, the 4 million people today don't have electricity and won't have probably many of them for the next 4 weeks in Florida? Do you believe any of those people were unaware that what that storm could do down there or that a storm would be in Florida before they bought their condos and high rises? Do you think in any of the comments they ever made about how they love that sunny Sunnabel or how they love Miami Beach and going out to Lincoln Run? Do you think any of those people ever brought up, oh, by the way, as I'm enjoying all this and there's a profit going up and there's a 400% improvement in my value of my property, but it could all be wiped away and I'm living in a place I shouldn't have lived. And even Zachary Taylor, one of the presidents of the United States, was the commander for 2 years of the army that oversaw the Seminoles. And we took that land by destroying the Seminole Nation. It took a long time to do it. And they at that time, they said it was infested with mosquitoes. No one should be living there. They would rather, what was the quote that Taylor said? He said something to the effect that I would rather have 1 acre of Indiana land than the whole state, you know, the whole area of Florida. So It's not from a lack of awareness. Go ask someone at a NASCAR or a rodeo. Do you think that drinking alcohol is good for you or better than orange juice or apple juice? They know what's better. Do you think having a salad's better than that cheeseburger? They know it. We are trying to apologize constantly for people's improper choices. There's a point where you got to stop. Stop apologizing for other people's intentional neglect. We are intentionally resisting change. We intentionally, if we want to resist change, then we have to be intentionally neglectful of anything that would allow us to make a more balanced and proper choice in life. Do you think anyone's overweight is unconscious about how they got overweight? They're fully aware of it. But then they have to give themselves emotional rationalizations and then other justifications. Do you think any of the people that were running into stores and looting, that's a criminal activity, are not aware of what they were doing was not right? But in their mind, they'll justify it. We always justify what we do. That's the deep, dark side of the subconscious conditioned self. Your kids and your husband are only going to see and hear and react to that subconscious. You're taking away something we like, something we're used to. How dare you? You're the bad mom. No, you're the conscious mom. You're the mom that loves your family so much, you're willing to accept them in spite of the conflict, at least until such time you realize that you might make a difference if you're patient. At a certain point, with children, you have to stay conscious and focused no matter what abuse you get in return. That's part of the responsibility of being a parent. And we may not like how our kids react to us, but we cannot react back in return. React with love and patience. Be fully conscious of what they become. And understand that at some point, had there been a real understanding of the relationship between food and disease, short-term and long-term, there might have been a different outcome. You've made that change. Don't come from anger or depression because they haven't made it yet. Keep showing documentaries. Keep giving articles. Keep bringing in interesting dishes. If they've got a hot dog, then bring in a soy dog. Show them if they got a cola, bring in a non-cola cola. If they've got ice cream, bring them in a coconut vegan ice cream. Try to show them that you're not asking them to make gross, let's say, sacrifices, just minor adjustments. Get them to go to the market with you. Get them to go to the farmer's market. Get them to see how much fun it can be. Take them down to Little Chinatown. Take them down to Little Italy. Take them down to Little Korea. Take them down on Lexington Avenue in the 30s, 37th Street, 36th Street, to Little India. You go into a store there and you're overwhelmed by the aromas and all the different choices. Show them this can be fun. It doesn't have to be a labor. It can be joyful. And in time, you may see a critical shift. And if not, then divorce your husband. All right? Thanks for your call. We're out of time, everyone. A lot of calls came in. Wow. And we'll try to take more on a next show. I'll save my commentary on the storm. I'll give you the ideas for those of you who still live in Florida, what you should do. I'm going to make a complete assessment in the next 24 hours, whether or not I will continue to live in Florida or like when I did when it was South Beach. And boy, you want to hear an argument I had. It was a one-sided argument where a friend of mine who's a real estate broker was really angry at me because I actually had the gall to sell what was considered one of the nicest townhouse, or not townhouse, apartment in all South Beach. I got there when it was just a ghetto. 15 years I lived there. But I sold it when the market was booming. You fool, you're an idiot, you're selling. I said, well, that's what you want to think, but I'm looking at the sea and the sea's coming. So I sold and got out. And other people, now watch what happens. I'll tell you what's going to happen. I'll tell you how the crash, the big real estate crash is going to come and what the likelihood of future residency in Florida is going to be. And yet today, sun is shining. You think nothing happened unless you happen to have been in the storm's wake. This is just the beginning. was going to be an ongoing, regular pattern. And yesterday's 146-mile-an-hour wind hitting Naples, that'll seem minor compared to what's going to happen in the next year or two, where there could be two or three or four categories that are much higher and much more rain coming down. But that'll wait for tomorrow. Have a nice day, everyone.